This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Sunday to you. June 10th, 2018. This is the day of the Puerto Rican Day Parade in New York City this afternoon. A lot of folks will be out and about, and a whole lot of people watching that very lively procession as well. Truly something to see if you never have seen that before. We have a busy show this morning in a number of ways, and we love when that happens. In the second hour of our program, we're actually going to be joined in studio by a guest who has joined us by phone a number of times previously. Dr. John Huber is in town, and he's actually going to be in studio with us in the second hour of our program this morning. And in the first hour of our show, I'm pleased to say that we have a guest who is joining us, who we spoke with at the end of July of last year. She is the executive director of the Fresh Air Fund. And I'm pleased to welcome back to our program here on WFAN, Fatima Shama. She has a very interesting background as well, having worked in nonprofits sector in ways to help families and children in a number of different positions. First of all, it's nice to have you join us again on our program. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me back.
A lot of different things that I want to get into in discussion here, but I was talking about this discussion today with a neighbor of mine yesterday. And she had a guest in her home, and her guest posed the question I'm putting to you first.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm always looking for a way to come up with questions in this case. She said, well, how exactly does the Fresh Air Fund work? What exactly do they do?
So, great question. The Fresh Air Fund, our principal mission, which has existed for 142 years, is that we offer opportunities to New York City children living in all five boroughs of New York City, who in essence live in under-resourced, underserved communities, who may not have access to, quote-unquote, getting into the outdoors. And so we provide free, no-cost opportunities to children who sign up to connect them to experiences in the summer, to being in the outdoors. And we do that through two principal programs. The first is our legacy program. It's a program that's existed for 142 years. We're actually entering our 142nd summer. And it's with host families up and down the East Coast. So as close as Long Island, New Jersey, Westchester, the tri-state area, to as far north as Maine, and to as far south as North Carolina. And in essence, individuals who live in rural and suburban areas, volunteer to welcome in a child from New York City into their homes for a week, 7 days, 10 days. Sometimes it's longer, but the first trip is normally about 7 to 10 days. And they invite a child to have an experience that allows them to be welcomed and included as a member of a family, right? Whatever one does in the summer, you invite a child to be a part of that. And I'll explain a little bit more about that program. I know we'll talk about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. And the second program is summer camp. We run 5 camps in the Lower Hudson Valley, and children are invited to come and be a part of a sleepaway summer experience for 2 weeks at one of our 5 camps. And we have both, we have single-sex camps, all girls, all boys, and then we have 2 co-ed camps. And that's, the entire mission of the Fresh Air Fund is summer. All of our relationships begin with summer, and begins with this opportunity for children to experience something different, something new, to be exposed to the beauty of nature, the peacefulness of nature, the fun of summer, whether it's swimming or being a part of a new environment, learning how to ride a bike, if you're at our camps, going for a hike or an overnight, s'mores are part of everyone's, we think. But it's really, how do we work? We work with an opportunity to give children childhood.
What a great phrase. An opportunity to give children childhood. And in many cases, that's almost, and this seems very strange to say this, it's almost like that's a lost cause for some kids these days.
Bob, you know, it's funny. I think we've talked about this before, but both being a born and raised New York City child from the Bronx to immigrant parents, I'm not sure I thought my childhood was unusual, right? I didn't go to summer camp. I didn't go away for the summer. We opened up the fire hydrants. We played in the street. We found a park. We went for those free breakfasts and free lunches at the local public school. We played. We went to the library. You know, all of these community resources that allow a child or a family to make up what seems like a summer experience. You know, in 1877, when the Fresh Air Fund started, we started because of a tuberculosis crisis in the Lower East Side and the tenement community, and the fact that tuberculosis was contagious across communities and was sort of running rampant. And it was the, you know, brilliant brainchild of a minister who was ministering both on the Lower East Side and in a rural part of Pennsylvania, who said, what if I asked my congregants if they would welcome in some children so the kids could cleanse their lungs? And so he had a community in Sherman, Pennsylvania, who welcomed in children in this quote-unquote visiting host family program, which we still run today, and that gave birth to the Fresh Air Fund. So as a person who worked in policy, I regularly look at this and I think, what a brilliant public health solution. But as you just noted, the issues we talk about today are not tuberculosis. We talk about gun violence. Mm-hmm. We talk about safe communities. We talk about open, clean, safe environments for kids to play in. We talk about asthma, rising rates of asthma, realities of good schools or quality schools or poor, you know, or what's happening in their school community, rising rates of obesity, food inequity, right? You know, food insecurity. Some kids have food 3 times a day. Some don't. The security of a school day or the structure of a school day provides a lot of opportunity for children who are living in incredibly challenged environments that are sort of laden with a lot of poverty. And to your point, the reality of what children should get in that wholeness is lost. Some of our kids are, quite honestly, navigating pretty complicated realities to get to school in the morning. Some are the caretakers for their siblings. Some are the caretakers for their parents or for their grandparents. Some are responsible for helping make sure there's food. And that's a pretty serious burden for so many kids. You know, over 500,000 kids in New York City live in poverty, right? We have over 8.4 million people living in New York City. 500,000 of our children live in poverty. Too many are living in homeless situations or in transitional situations. And so when do, to your point, or to this point we've just talked about, when do kids actually get to be kids and get to be curious and get to learn and get to see and try? And just understand the innocence of what that experience is. Because the stress levels of life, even on little children, right, the cumulative effects of that stress really have a very seriously detrimental reality on their public health, on their outcomes in general. not to mention the social realities, right? How
exactly.
do kids get to see something else? How do they get to have a role model? How do they get to know that they can accomplish something? You know, you learn how to swim. Swimming is a life skill, A, but B, it's a confidence. It's totally connected to self-esteem.
You know, as I'm listening to you, I'm also thinking about this idea that was espoused by one of your predecessors, Jenny Morgenthau, when she was executive director, and I interviewed her a number of years back. She said something that at the time stopped me in my tracks, and when I think about it to this day, it still does. She talked about the fact that many kids may never have left their burrow before the Fresh Air Fund experience. And that floored me.
Mm-hmm.
And still does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just think what this is. I mean, you're opening up a world, basically.
You know, this remains a reality. This remains a reality. Children know their neighborhood, perhaps. They don't even, you know, I visited a school in Bushwick, Brooklyn recently, and I was having a great conversation with the principal and a number of her team, and one of the things her team said to me was this very phrase, and they said, part of the reason we love this so much and we love our partnership so much is because our kids don't even know Park Slope exists, right? A different neighborhood in Brooklyn. They have no idea that there is a different environment besides this very community, and we want them to see that. We want them to know that there's more, that they can see more, and that they can have more. And that this is coming from educators that are very richly involved in the lives of a community of kids. And so that fact is still remains quite present. We have a young man interning with us this summer who's a former Fresh Air child, a former Fresh Air participant, who just shared with me that when he was 11 years old and his mother signed him up for the Fresh Air Fund, he grew up in public housing in Brooklyn. He said he remembers getting on the bus and being on the bus and watching all the tall buildings go away and then just watching sort of how it evolved. And he says, that was the first time I ever saw. He said, I'd never seen so much grass. I'd never seen so much grass. And I think, you know, it's that simple. Right? It's seeing grass. I remember, I may have shared this with you, my very first summer, since you noted I'm still new, I'm going into my third summer, my very first summer at the Fresh Air Fund, I was at the summer camp, and I was with a group of young boys, and I said to one of the young boys, who was in a nine-year-old all-boys camp, and I said to him, what do you love about camp? And he said, everything, miss. And I said, well, tell me. And he said, did you know stars are real?
Okay, hold that thought, because you've opened up so many different possibilities.
Okay.
We can go in discussion, and my mind is racing with thoughts. We had to take a pause in our discussion. We're talking with Fatima Shama. More with her as we talk about the work of the Fresh Air Fund.
New York.
Imagine Joe getting pumped up. I may have to tune into that. Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter on our program this morning. We're talking about the work of the Fresh Air Fund in Hour 1. And talking with us is the executive director of the Fresh Air Fund, Fatima Shama. And she has shared a little bit of information with us background-wise on the organization. I interrupted you before we paused for our sports update and some messages. You were talking with us about this experience that you had talking with a young man who was a participant. Would you complete that thought?
Yeah. So I was sharing with you this idea about children not never leaving their community so I was with a 9-year-old boy, and we were at the all boys camp, and I asked what he was enjoying about camp, and he said everything. And then he turned to me and he said, do you know the stars are real, miss? And I said to him, what do you mean? And he said, the stars at night, those things in the sky. And I said, yeah. And he said, they're real, they're not just in books, they're really real, you can see them here. And I had a total moment of pause. And part of that was, he'd never seen stars before. He'd never left his community, and he thought stars were something that appeared in books, and actually not real things you see at night. And I say to you, Bob, these are the things that, from an exposure and experience perspective, it's everything from leaving those, you know, the 20 block radius of your borough or your neighborhood, to stepping into a lake, to seeing stars, right? These are these experiences that we provide at the Fresh Air Fund with our partners, right? We do this, you know, with an extraordinary number of volunteer host families who welcome children into their homes. We do this because, and with great thanks to, an extraordinary number of donors who provide the resources to help us do this. So we've got great partners who help us do this. But it is the simplicity of these little things that can truly change a child's experience, both for themselves, but in their worldview.
And when we talk about the work of the Fresh Air Fund, a couple thoughts come to mind. You know, we've talked an awful lot about this idea of summer, but really your work is year-round.
That's right. That's right. Thank you for circling back to that. So we start in the summer. Our relationships start in the summer. And then we really do build on them year-round, and we want to. So if you attend our camps, you have opportunities to get some academic support throughout the year. And if you're in middle school, it's some tutoring. And if you're in high school, it's a mentoring program. If you're in our visiting host family program, which we commonly refer to as our Friendly Towns program, it is a program that either the host family connects year-round with the child in some way, shape, or form, or we are trying to create these touch points, whether it's, again, bringing children to maybe we have great support from a community of partners in New York, so it might be that we get tickets to a show or to a basketball game or a baseball game, and we're able to take the kids to that because, once again, these may be things our children have never been experienced before. It might be a show in the city. It might be actually to Brooklyn Bridge Park or to Central Park or to be a part of a different, you know, experience in New York City. So we're trying to stay in touch with kids because we realize those are those experiences that keep us connected and keep kids moving along this trajectory of continuously being exposed and enriched. And fundamentally, that's what we want to do.
Okay. A lot of thoughts and questions I have. One thing we haven't done, which we probably should do a couple of different times in our discussion, for people who are, and there are going to be people who will be touched by some of the things you were sharing with us, they want to be maybe be in contact with the Fresh Air Fund. What's the best way for them to do that?
So I would say the best way to start is through our website, and that is freshair.org. I'll say it again, freshair.org. That's the sort of terminal way to start with us, where you can volunteer to join us if you're interested in hosting a child or learning more and figuring out what's that responsibility. It is a rigorous process. And so for anyone who's wondering, you know, what do you mean you place children in someone's home? It is a rigorous process. And first someone calls us and tells us they're interested. We have a great phone interview. And then someone visits the home, meets everyone in the home, inspects the home, makes sure that it's a safe environment, that it is a comfortable environment where we would feel comfortable placing our own children. Everyone in the home over 18 goes through a background check process, and then we do reference checks on the family. And I have been asked, so, you know, what do the reference checks result in? Ironically, we may get, you know, it has to be someone who knows the family, so it might be a pediatrician or a teacher or a faith leader in that person's world, but it's a series of references. And someone may say to us, you know, this family is really great, but they're involved in so many things. They're very busy. And that's a little code for us, right? It might be, is that the right place for a child or not? So we really do some due diligence in making sure this is a right environment to host a child. The other, of course, is we have this extraordinary network of volunteers who are on the ground who help us do all this great work. And they have their ear to the ground. They have a really good sense of what's happening, and they sort of do their own due diligence in addition. And so that's how one can become a volunteer host family. And one can learn about it by going to our website. If someone hears this and thinks, I'd like to enroll my child, or I know someone who should enroll their child, we are still accepting applications for the summer. We actually continue to accept applications through August because we believe that if a parent is looking for an opportunity to have their child be a part of something where they can get enriched and exposed, we'd like to be there to support that parent in that process. So again, freshair.org is the place you can start and enroll. If someone wants to help us do this work, we only can do it through the generosity of individuals, and one can donate on our website. And the last thing I would say is we welcome volunteers year-round. So they could be tutors, they could be mentors, they could be part of a corporate community. They might want to just learn more. And so, again, our website, freshair.org, is the place where it can help start.
Are there special talents or resources that you're perhaps more or most in need of?
That's a great question. I will say in the academic year, we always love volunteers who work with us to help tutor our kids and to mentor. We run a College Connections program, and once a week, we bring together an extraordinary cadre of mentors who support our kids, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders, in thinking about college, in applying to college, in writing essays. So a skill set, first I would say, is the curiosity and desire to do this. And we have people who come to us because they recall having had that kind of mentorship that helped them, or they love the outdoors themselves, and this is a connection they get to be a part of for children, or kids who, you know, people who are affinity for their own camp experience, and they love helping us, or just people who want to be a part of a community. So I don't know if there's any direct skill set, but I would say the first one is, you know, desire to help. We are always looking for talent across the spectrum because we can use it. We can use it in every sense, whether it's from a marketing perspective to a skills perspective around, you know, real estate, because we own 2,000 acres in the lower Hudson Valley, and we're regularly looking at the infrastructure. And then, of course, generosity. You know, I say people have time, they have talent, and they have treasure. And we are happy to take all of them and any one of them because we need all three.
Okay, that 2,000 acres in the lower Hudson Valley, what sort of things are available on those sites, those campsites for the kids?
Yeah. So our reservation, known as the Sharp Reservation, it was actually gifted to us in the early 1930s by a surgeon here from New York City, Dr. Sharp. And we've now been able to really have this extraordinary oasis of 2,000 acres, over 2,000 acres. So we have on the property a planetarium. We have a farm. We have a nature center, an environmental center. We have two lakes. We have an extraordinary, robust reality of a high ropes course and a low ropes course. And during the summer, this is exactly where all of our children participate in camp. During the academic year, we invite schools, we invite community groups to come and use us. And we actually serve about 15,000 children during the academic year from neighboring schools, again, from the tri-state area, from church groups or community groups, Girl Scout troops, who come up and use us as their nature centers and their environmental centers. And so we operate year-round on that property.
And when we're talking about what's involved in terms of preparing for the summer programs and, you know, the camp offerings and all, when do you really, I guess, do the guts of the preparation work?
Well, it starts soon after it ends. So we are 16 days away from our, you know, first batch of buses leaving as we serve over 6,000 kids a summer. We are literally 16 days away from that first set of 18 buses leaving with hundreds of children. We hire over 500 people to work with us over the summer, and that process begins in January. I will say that in the fall we are doing a lot of review and a lot of circling back to sort of really review the impact of all of what we did. And then we start to put in new plans. In January, we start to reconnect with all of our host families again. We start to hire those hundreds of people who work with us. And we are right now in that moment of preparing everything so that we can be ready to welcome our thousands of children and serve them through the summer.
What's it like that first day?
So that first day for us is incredibly exciting because, as I shared before, this is our 142nd summer. I don't know how many organizations across this city or the region can reflect on its history. And so we both are extraordinarily proud but really excited to launch into this new opportunity of yet once again hopefully making a summer last a lifetime in the memory of a child. And so we kick off from Riverbank State Park in Upper Manhattan, and hundreds of families are coming in with luggage to sign up their children, to sort of do the handoff. There's a lot of kisses. There's a lot of cheers, camp cheers. And then it all begins, right? There's smiles. Our staff is really excited. I will say I get very nervous. And then by about noon on the first day, we're all just really we glow. I think this reality of what we get to do amid the madness of sort of what can happen in a child's world, or I have three children of my own, and I was talking to someone yesterday saying I'm not sure I ever wanted my 8-year-old to know the terms lockdown, or to know that it's a common thing to have a drill for a lockdown. I grew up, we all had fire drills.
Right.
I'm not so sure my desire was to ever have my child talk about lockdown drills. But that's a reality. And when do kids get to escape that? And I know how I prepare for my children to escape that. But for people who may not have those resources or access to those resources, we get to be that place. So I am delighted, and I thank you for giving us a chance to talk about the Fresh Air Fund and talk about how we can be that resource and opportunity to have children escape from some of these things that are just too heavy in the life of a child. Let them be children.
Is fundraising something that really is an ongoing situation throughout the course of the year?
Fundraising is a nonstop reality, and it is a nonstop reality. And I will say once again, it is truly the generosity of individuals, of corporations, but really the generosity of individuals that help us and allow us to do this work. Our board over the years has really committed to us being a no-cost program, really a program that allows someone to not worry about the fees. And to your point, it's everything from a special event or our big benefits to getting letters in the mail with any size donation. It's a child who runs a lemonade stand who sends us their makings from a lemonade stand. It's someone who hears me on your radio show who sends us a note or who goes online. It's someone who used to host in their childhood who's now a grown-up and says, I really want to thank you, or a former Fresh Air child. Fundraising is nonstop, and it is truly the generosity of individuals who lets us do this work, and we couldn't be more thankful to all of them, and to you, actually, for giving me this chance to talk about our work.
We're going to talk more about the work of the Fresh Air Fund. Fatima Shama is talking with us on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning. It's Sunday morning on The Fan. Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. We're in a discussion with Fatima Shama, who is Executive Director of the Fresh Air Fund. She's our guest this hour of our program on The Fan. And we've talked an awful lot about the work of the Fresh Air Fund. What we haven't done is, if some folks who are listening to us perhaps want to join in this discussion, you can. 877-337-6666 is our number here at WFAN. One of the questions I wanted to pose to you, actually, there's a couple of them popping in my head. Mm-hmm. One is to talk about, this thing that comes up in the summer very often with teachers and students. They talk about this idea of what's referred to as a summer learning gap for kids. Mm-hmm. Is it possible for the Fresh Air Fund to work in, like, kind of trying to address that?
Yeah. Thanks, Bob. We we hear this so much from teachers. So just as you've introduced kids, and we know this, right? You and I remember this from our own childhoods. You know, the summer happens and we're so excited to have a break.
Oh, yeah.
And then September comes and, wah, here we are once again. and so for our teachers and our educators, they have to spend a good chunk of the beginning of September recapturing, sort of getting kids right back into that rhythm. For a lot of kids, they spend time, perhaps, reading over the summer, being part of all these awesome experiences, so that when the teacher starts to say on that first day of school or that first week of school, tell me about your summer experience or tell me about your summer, what fun things did you do? And then that becomes your moment to start, you know, writing all these great writing ideas that happen in the school year. You know, if kids don't have exposure to something different, if they aren't engaged in that enriching kind of way, and it's everything from, I don't want to suggest that it only happens from a book. You know, it actually is when you're playing carefree and you try something new. I met a girl last summer on her return from her friendly town visit from Vermont, and I said to her, how was your summer? And she said, it was so great. I said, what was new to you? And she said, blueberries. I said, blueberries? She said, I just love blueberries. And, you know, it's so when she returns to school, she's going to talk about blueberries. She's going to have an experience to reflect on. And perhaps those blueberries become the points of her essays or her stories. But now she has a reflection point and she has a learning experience. And so for us, there is this academic piece. There is this enrichment piece. And we try our best to make sure, I think host families certainly do this, where they are engaging kids in so many different discussions. I don't, you know, we don't make it mandatory for anyone to read or do any of those kinds of things. We encourage people, certainly our visiting host families, to engage our children in experiences that they would with their own. And in our summer camping program, we do have libraries. We do actually, there's quiet time. All the children, you know, we're a no cell phone, no technology camp. And so children have to write their parents over the summer, and we encourage parents to write their kids. But all of these things add to responding to this gap, because when children are away from that learning in any way, shape, or form, they really are less prepared. The other thing I would tell you is when kids aren't excited or have that break over the summer, you and I both know the power and reality of a vacation, right? Mm. That sort of, that break, that really mental break, that mental and physical break where you can relax and fully relax, we return refreshed. And so we think it's really important that kids have that experience to both engage in that enrichment, educational, academic, deep, you know, sort of small, medium, and large, but really that refreshing that happens over the summer so that when you do come back in September, you're really ready to learn. You're really ready to talk about something. You can sit in a classroom and not feel out of place, but really share some ideas. And maybe your ideas become the vicarious realities of all the other kids. But that teacher all of a sudden has something to work with you on, and you have a context as a student to be able to add to a discussion. So we do think we're addressing the summer learning gap and hopefully enriching children ready to be back in the classroom in September.
And is it a challenge for the Fresh Air Fund to also address the way in which the demographics of New York City have changed over the years?
You know, it's we started in 1877 with this historical nuance that is New York. You know, New York is a city of immigrants, and the Lower East Side in 1877 was home to the first Germans in New York, or the Hungarians, or the start of our Jewish communities, you know, which then followed into the Irish communities and the Italian communities. So all of those communities have been part of the Fresh Air Fund, right? We have historically served very, very interestingly part of the newest New Yorkers, part of the New Yorkers that were trying to navigate opportunities to expose their children. And so, you know, once upon a time, the languages spoken by our participants were German and Yiddish and Italian. And today, the languages we hear most in our families are Spanish, and it's families coming from the Dominican Republic and Mexico, longstanding Puerto Rican communities that are still in New York, perhaps maybe some small pockets of Latin Americans, Ecuadorians, and Colombians in populations in Queens. And then we have a very large, fast-growing Chinese community of children who come to our programs. And then there's pockets across the city, whether it's, you know, West African or Caribbean families that are signing their children up, Nepalese families who sign their children up. And then we have the historical, long-term African-American families across the city. And so we have this beautiful array of children and communities that sign up for the Fresh Air Fund with this common thread. It's parents who are looking for opportunities to give their child something different, a new experience, a new exposure. It may be a break. A parent may say, I need a break, or I think my children would benefit from this. But whatever it is, there is this common link, and I would say we are seeing this demographic shift as we see across the city. But the one thing I think that's pretty brilliant is we've always been that provider, and we'll continue to be that provider.
And when we talk about the changing demographics in the city, let's go back to something that we talked about earlier with the idea of host families.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the family structure has changed greatly over the years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to go back to the pre-Stone Age era when I was a child, but, you know, things were a lot different, generally speaking, in terms of the family structure at that time. The traditional American family, in many ways, is vastly different. There is no one set family,
mm-hmm.
Per se. How is that factored into the way in which you decide about host families?
Well, we care most about the reality of a safe environment,
mm-hmm.
and welcoming environment. And that finds its way to your very point across a broad spectrum. We have a very large community of hosts who are fair to call empty nesters. They've raised their children, or their children are off at college. Maybe they were once Fresh Air Fund hosts when their children were younger, and now they've decided to return to supporting us or being a host family. This might be their first time choosing to host. We have single parents who've chosen. We have individuals who don't have children but think, you know, we'd really love to, I have a weekend house, or I live in, you know, with all this space, I'd love to share that. We have couples that are same-sex couples that have hosted or are hosting or who sign up. So we really do respond to what is reality in our landscape today. And they go through all the same processes. We have the traditional, you know, two-parent household and we have, you know, a variety of other hosts who sign up. And we, you know, it's incredibly important for us to understand this is really about role modeling. The host family program, in my mind, you know, I think lots of people think about big brothers and big sisters and having participated once upon a time in a big sister mentorship program. I actually think of the host family program similar to that model, and it really is it is family mentoring, right? It's mentoring family style. So everyone in the household actually is a part of this child's experience, and conversely, that child is giving everyone in the home a new perspective, a different conversation, a better understanding. And so between children, they learn things, but between children and adults, they learn something else. I had a host mother say to me recently, the experience for her was so powerful because off the bus comes this young man who's wearing a T-shirt that said, shoot hoops, not guns, which is actually a program that many of our public housing communities have engaged in, right,
mm-hmm.
to get kids to play basketball, whether it's midnight basketball. And so this young boy walks off and, he was just wearing his shirt. And this host mom said it was the first thing she saw that struck her, where she thought, this isn't our reality, but this is, you know, and for her, that was the start of an experience of just welcoming this young boy into her community, into her home, and really allowing for that to help inform what kind of experience she wanted to make sure he had, which was free of any of those things and really focused on just playing hoops, not worrying about anything else being shot.
Mm. What's on your wish list as an organization?
That's such a great question. I would be a bad fundraiser if I didn't tell you that in order to do what we do, we need resources. And as you note, I spend a good amount of time raising the dollars to do that. With our 2,000-acre property, we are regularly having to invest in a number of things, and that is a very big, those have very big price tags, and those are wishes for us. I think we have the capacity to grow. We have over 10,000 applications for children every year. At camp, we have 3,000 beds, so I can serve 3,000 children in New York City in our camps. With our host families, we have been a robust community of host families. I'll tell you, we have to get more New York City children. This is a conversation where we've learned it's hard, it seems, I think in today's day and age, for parents to trust this idea of my child going to someone's home. So we've spent a lot of time at the Fresh Air Fund telling stories of success, because these relationships around a child and a host family have demonstrated to us these extraordinary outcomes, whether it's about partnership and friendship and new relationships, to really life-changing experiences. And we want New York City families to know that. We want them to hear it actually from the Fresh Air children themselves or from host families. So my wish list actually is a bit of a campaign around the Fresh Air Fund today. We are as relevant today as we were 140 years ago or 50 years ago. Children need an opportunity to have an experience that really just exposes them, gives them a new environment, reconnects them back to their community. And so part of my wish list is a campaign. It's a campaign to re-energize who we are as an organization, bring back alumni to help us retell that story to today's youth and to today's families, and continue to build the legacy of what this organization has done. And really, we've learned where a summer can last a lifetime. And we believe that children deserve those memories, because those things can propel them forward in new ways.
Your alumni, I mean, are they supportive? Are they the type of alumni that, you know, will come back and tell their stories?
We welcome alumni to come back. I mean, it's one of the things that's high on my agenda, is to really bring back an alumni community and really invest in figuring out the who and how. We have had an extraordinary, we've served in our history over 1.8 million children, thousands every year. And so we are eager to bring back alumni. So if there's anyone who's listening who participated in the Fresh Air Fund, who was a host or host brother or sister your family may have hosted, freshair.org, tell us your story. Please reach back out to us. We'd love to talk to you and love to hear what's happening in your life today. And if and how we had an impact and how to get you reconnected. We have had alumni come back. We have a board member who's a former Fresh Air child. We have a number of mentors. I will tell you that in our we employ a number of former Fresh Air children, both in the summer and then actually as full-time staff. In our camping staff, I shared earlier, we hire over 500 people to work with us. About a quarter of our staff for counselors this summer are former Fresh Air participants. And it is something extraordinarily powerful to both see and to have children experience. When someone says, when your counselor, who you look up to, says to you, I was a Fresh Air kid, and, you know, I'm studying engineering at Buffalo State. Mm-hmm. I promise you that 10-year-old boy or girl walks away and that's it. Their world has changed. They are going to go to Buffalo State. They're going to study engineering. And now they know exactly who they want to be when they grow up. It is very powerful. And we think it's powerful, not just in this, you know, 20-something-year-old, but in those historic stories. We really want to know, and we'd love to help welcome people back. And so alumni is really important to us. And we love to showcase their stories, engage them. Social media is wonderful for that, right? The reality of Facebook and sort of pushing out stories. This is what we want to be doing.
Mm. Sounds like an interesting position, interesting organization. And also fascinating in terms of the possibilities that there are, with the Fresh Air Fund. I thank you for joining us again on our program. Repeat the web address, please.
It's www.freshair.org.
Fatima Shama, thank you very much for joining us on our program.
Fatima, Bob, thank you so much for having me this morning.
And certainly the best with the efforts of the Fresh Air Fund. Interesting discussion in starting our program. And hopefully some of the folks who are listening to us can be supportive of the efforts of the Fresh Air Fund, whether that's through donations, perhaps working as a volunteer in some way, or just getting involved. Maybe you've now got that idea about seeking to become a host family. Could literally change a child's life. A lot more to get to. Another guest joins us in studio in our next hour.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.